possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome along to a special emergency. I think that's what they call it in podcasts, and an emergency podcast. We're coming to you straight after the draw on the 6-1 news. We don't have a government, but we have Munster and Leinster hurling championship draws. How bad? I'm joined by Brendan Cummins, Rory O'Neill, and Tomás O'Shea. If I go in anti-clockwise direction, how are you doing, lads?
Good. All good.
Mikey, all good.
Good. Good stuff. So. We might as well get straight to the parish pump, I suppose. Brendan, we'll start with you. All-Ireland champions, a bye to the Munster semi-final is the good news. The bad news is you have to play the winners of... You have to... The newly crowned league champions, whichever one, the Limerick or Clare, come out of the quarter-final in an as-yet undetermined venue.
Yeah, I suppose we've had 3 months of real unusual stuff with COVID and lockdown. So a lot of the younger players will say we've had the unusual sensation of your heart thumping, wondering who you're going to play. Because remember, the last number of years we've had a league basis. So certainly I felt that for when Cork and Waterford came out of the draw. I said, right, Tip are going to have to play Limerick in the semi-final. But yeah, it's a big one. I mean, certainly looking at Clare and Limerick in the first round, Clare will be happy enough in that they get a first crack at Limerick. You can be sure no one's going to really know what their performance is going to be like. So if you're going to play Limerick, who have really been the form team the last 18 months, better to play them first than when they've got a game over themselves. And of course, the All-Ireland champions then Tip wait for it. And Lucas, there's no doubt Munster has always been a battlefield, there's no doubt about it, with no easy touches. And I think as well for Cahill, you know, first season involved with Waterford, having all these things thrown at him. I think in the back of it all, he'll be happy enough now too to avoid a Tipperary in Limerick. Waterford won't have any major fears of playing Cork. They'll obviously respect him like everybody does. But they will see an opportunity in this as well, there's no doubt, to get to a Munster final and skip over a few of those round robins that might happen if you get knocked out earlier.
Yeah, sure. We'll just stay with the hurling briefly, because we also got the Leinster draw as well, and I think I can actually bring that one up here now. The wonders of technology, and no, I can't. So I'm going to give up on that. Anyway, it's pretty short. There's only 5 teams. It's Wexford are going to play Galway in the semi-final, and Kilkenny are going to play the winners of Laois and Dublin in the other semi-final. Brendan, it seems pretty clear Wexford and Galway have got the raw end of the stick there, the short end of the stick.
Yeah, it was. It was probably always going to be case when Laois and Dublin came out of the pot. There's only going to wonder who would play them. And Kilkenny, I think, again, while they're respectful to all opposition, will be happy enough that they're not in the Galway and Wexford side. I think for Davy as well, it's going to be a tough test. I mean, I would expect they haven't fixtures out yet, but if the game was on in Croke Park, you know, obviously conditions and weather conditions and style of play and all this will come into it. I think the way Wexford played the game with a running game, it is prone to a lot of errors. So we could have hailstones next September or October when they play. So the style of play could come against them. Galway that little bit more direct, but it is certainly a mouthwatering tie. There's no doubt when Wexford and Galway pair off against each other. Both of them have huge aspirations this year by Christmas Eve to be in an All-Ireland final.
You say September or October. Rory, correct me if I'm wrong, that those Leinster semi-finals, could they be in November?
November. I think the semi-finals are all slated to be on the same weekend, which is November 14, 15. And that's going to be the interesting part of what this is. Just a frenetic nature week on week. You won't have much time to rest. That's probably why I think from a Limerick and a Clare perspective, their task has been made ever so slightly more difficult, because they're going to have to come out of the blocks quite early, show their hand, and hold nothing back, because you can't really, and you certainly can't be gambling on going in through the back door, given the nature of the back door as well. Because if you go through the back door, you're looking at round one, round two, quarter final, semi final, and final. That's after you've been eliminated from the provincial championships. So to try and eke in All Ireland out by going that route in winter, picking up injuries, soft tissue stuff, not a lot of hurling done, probably not that appealing, certainly for the more mature teams. The ones with the bigger panels, I think, will be certainly favoured here, I would imagine, those with the deeper panels and the deeper pockets as well. And but I mean, like, the fact that you're going back to straight, I think Cork Waterford but the draw certainly kind of gave me great, it was like a real throwback to 2002, 2004, yeah. 2005, that era when they used to meet so often in those knockout games. And like, I think it'll be, like, it'll probably be Thurles. You'd imagine that a neutral venue for that, and Thurles is the right place for it. And, you know, it's just really, like, all these games now are just going to be fantastic. Straight knockout in football as well. I don't know whether tomorrow, I mean, it's like, the best thing is that we're looking forward to matches, finally. And that's the big today.
Yeah, so Tomás, the date in your diary, you can ring it now, is the 7th or 8th of November is when you'll play your Munster semi-final. Well, Kerry will play their Munster semi-final against Cork. Familiar foes, but unfamiliar round and an unfamiliar time of year, is you can say for sure.
Yeah, the whoever has a homecoming this year, to be fine, they'll have their clothes and they'll be throwing snowballs at each other, hopefully. it's weird. And I suppose you'd be hopeful that between here and there, that nothing actually happens in terms of, and I was thinking myself, the pessimist in myself, always, like, what happens if a player in a county team gets COVID-19, like, what happens? That county shuts down.
Okay. 16 NBA players tested positive today. We've got another golfer who's gone. The PGA Tour is looking in a little bit of bother. So I don't think you're being pessimistic. I think you're being realistic, to be brutally honest.
Yeah. That's the only worry I'd have, Mikey, because when you think about it, like, I come from Dingle, right? And everybody is bracing themselves for next Monday on. They reckon that the place will be flooded in terms of people. And you have to think, like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, Paul Gainey is in that industry and he's a barman and he's going to have to work. That's his livelihood. He's hardly going to avoid it, or those around him aren't going to avoid it. And it's just a worry you'd have. Now, having said that, I think everybody in life in general are going to be safer, and it is great. It's great to watch the matches coming back. I'm involved in a minor team in Cork, and it's great to be back training with them. And inter-county, at the end of the day, we all love club, and this is my own personal view, I still want to see the big games. And, you know, early on in a knockout championship, when you have Donegal and Tyrone going at each other, when you have Mayo Roscommon going at each other, when you have even the preliminary in Ulster of Cavan and Monaghan, you have Kerry and Cork, and I know, take Dublin out of it and you'll get Kildare and probably Meath in Leinster. No disrespect to others, but that's a possibility. You'll have great knockout matches. And, you know, another thing, and I was discussing it with a buddy of mine this evening, and I think, like, this is just, and people would say, oh, the RT boys going on, like, it's a strange championship and it's a weird championship, right? And it's a condensed championship. And I would hope, imagine now, like, the way, I don't know, Rory, you might have be able to explain this, the rights of the TV, like, I would just hope that every match will be seen, every top level match will be seen free to, and everybody will say, no, well, look at the boys going on there. But I'd hope so, because I do think, like, if you're from Donegal and you're just, Christ, if you're waiting to see them play and then you can't, and then they're out of the championship, I don't know. I don't know. I just think it's wrong in the championship that we have. But on the other side of that, Christ, I'm looking forward to it. I do think, and we were discussing it before, if you're a Kerry and you'll have Monaghan, for example, are going through the quarterfinals away in Ulster. It takes them four games. If they get to an All-Ireland semi, four games, it'll take Kerry or Cork or Mayo or Galway or anybody in Connacht two games to get to the semi-final. And that is the provincial system that we have. They are the holes you pick. But in fairness, I think it's absolutely a feast of knockout, exciting. Every single weekend there'll be something to talk about. It's going to come fast and heavy, and I can't actually wait. All going well, I can't wait for it to kick off, to be quite honest.
It's speaking of straight knockout, and the big news obviously that came out as well today. I'd be interested in everybody's view. It's extra time and penalties in every game, including the All Ireland finals. What do we think?
I think the penalties in football. Sure, Brendan, you're the same. Like, in hurling, in football, it just seems wrong. It seems wrong. Like, if you're on the losing end of that, and I read the layout by the GA, and it specifically said semi-finals and finals, all games, extra time, 10 minutes a half. And then penalties.
Yep.
Look, I suppose it's a strange year. if you were given the choice, you take it. I was thinking like that they might change for the semi-final and final, but then that's an insult to other counties that might be knocked out earlier. So if you're going to start it early, you're going to have to go the same way all the way through. Look, you'll have to take it, lads.
Kerry beating Dublin in an All-Ireland final in the snow with a penalty shootout. Sure, they keep you talking.
I love it, Mikey.
Lifetime.
I love it.
With an orange O'Neill's.
It's true. I think we'd take it either way. I mean, 2 months ago, if you think about it, lads, we were saying, my God, what's going to happen with this championship? Will we ever have any hurling or football and all? So here we are, and it's a shotgun start. It's just going to be the way it is. And if Chip or whoever wins that All-Ireland final, if it's penalties, I presume the hurling will be a penalty shootout rather than 65. If that's the way it goes, as a former goalie, Jesus, what better than to be 2 weeks from Christmas with a chance to save a penalty to win an All-Ireland final for your county? Jesus, what you dream about, like?
Or 2 weeks inside the pub and fellas giving out you for losing it for them.
look at that. Look, leave your pessimistic reports wrong. Sure, we always said the podcast was cancelled because COVID was coming back. Get your inner Donald Trump out, will you, and have a bit of positivity. Might be reckless, but have it.
It'll be hard, lads, but I think, look, it's the same for everybody. It's the knockout is not ideal either in the football in terms of having a second chance. And I just think we'll have to take into account that it's a different year. It is. They're trying to condense it into whatever time they have. And look, you take it. I'll take it anyway. You know, everybody wants to have
another. Take it. Sorry, Tomás. One other thing that I've seen, we got our club fixtures there as well recently now. And we're obviously a dual club. It's football and hurling every single week. And I think of the Noel McGraths of this world, the Bubble the Wires and Tipperary, the Limerick Hurlers will be playing football as well. They'll go through probably 8 weeks of non-stop playing. And then they might have 2 weeks or 3 weeks off, depending on how the structure of the championship is. And then they go into another block. So whoever can manage the rest more than the work, I suppose, in between that could be kings as well of all this with the effort. But I think the in-between parts when county teams meet up will be as much about their recovery as it is about preparing for the next match. So there's a mind
if they meet up.
Managers.
If they meet up, yeah. That's very, if. They might not, you know, they might just have a Zoom call.
I think they even touched on that earlier on in the press conference that, look, they're not going to invest penalties on county players or teams for meeting up. You just couldn't. Just the elite players have to meet up, and that's the way it is.
But sure, if we're going to be on it, lads, like county teams are meeting up. There's no, I've no doubt in my mind that all county teams. And when you think about it, and what's on, like the inter-county scene is such that I think they'd actually be half foolish not to be meeting up. And I think everybody's saying it doesn't matter if you have a window of 3 months or if you have a window of 2 months or 8 weeks or whatever. They'll always be the county. If you're trying to squash them into a period of time, there'll be the county v club situation. And I think clubs would be delighted if they see their county players in the coming weeks once a week. I think it would be an awe. They'd be lucky to see them once a week. And that's even during club championship time. I think that's the way it's going to be. And I think clubs will have to accept it. I think GA after coming out saying that they're not going to penalise them. So that's basically not giving them a free hand, but I think that's what's going to happen. And I don't really have an issue with it. County players, I think if you gave them the choice of who to train with right now at the moment, they'd probably say if we got one night a week with clubs and the rest with the county, that's a fair enough. And clubs would take that, I think.
I think that's realistic, and I think that's probably fair as well. That would be where I would come down on it as just an observer from the outside. Brendan, as a coach, someone involved with Kerry, what do you make of the Joe McDonagh Cup not having entry into the Liam McCarthy this year? It's the hurling equivalent of the back door being, you know, football's lost its back door, it's a straight knockout, and the sacrifice in hurling is the Joe McDonagh counties, which is, you know, it's an easy enough sacrifice for the GA to make because, you know, it is the second tier, and it's just there's no rope ladder this year.
No, there's not. And I suppose that the glass half full part of that is that the final of the Joe McDonagh is on before the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final. So certainly for any team that gets to that Joe McDonagh final, they are on the biggest stage for hurling in the country. So they have a huge opportunity. They will qualify for next year's All-Ireland Series, I think. So it is a big opportunity for any of the teams in that Joe McDonagh. I'm just thinking of the Antrims and Carlos, even Kerry side of it, that, you know, this chance to play on All-Ireland final day is just huge for these players. So, I mean, right, they will have to give a little in that they can't get into the Lee McCarthy proper, but you are there on All-Ireland final day, and I think that's what all these teams would focus on. What better occasion to showcase what you're made of than that day when the whole world really is watching. So that's, I take the positives out of that decision.
Okay. Rory, just to go a little bit in-house with this, but it's actually a question that's come up on Twitter quite a lot today about the matches.
Sure.
People are assuming there are going to be fewer matches on TV. The GAA, like the only way they could have fulfilled the TV contracts, you would think, would have been to go with Friday night games. They've decided against that. Have you any idea yet what the figure is going to be between RTE and Sky for what games are going to be shown?
No, we don't. So that's all still under negotiation, and it'll be all kind of hammered out now that we have a proper concrete plan. But so you'll have 8 weeks from the beginning of the provincial series right up to the end of the All-Ireland. But four of those are given over to the All-Ireland finals and semi-finals. So you're going to have a glut of games in that four-week period from the time when the championships begin, which is around the 1st of November, which will be full on. And you still only have four broadcasting slots, which is 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, Saturday, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, Sunday. So and Sky will obviously come on board with some of those games. Who knows what they will do? In fairness to Sky, look, you wouldn't know. Like, you'd be hoping that they would make those games available free to air, which they have done for some of the games, even in the Premier League. So it wouldn't be unheard of now if the game, you know, like Tomás mentioned earlier, like it, you could see some big matches behind the paywall, and that might, you know, be that might be a sticky wicket, all right, for some. But there's no divvy up yet in terms of who's doing what. We will obviously still show the vast majority or the majority of the games, but all of that now will probably be hammered out, I'd say, over the next week.
What do we know, if anything, home advantage venues, has anybody heard anything about this? Because it's we're guessing Croke Park's going to be used as much as possible in Leinster because it's the biggest, and you would imagine Tomás down in Munster, it's going to be Semple and Páirc Caoimhe are going to be the venues of choice. Have you heard anything?
I heard that no decision has been made on venues yet, but I presume the bigger the venue, the better in terms of getting crowds in there. And in terms of the Kerry Cork, definitely it'll be going to Páirc Caoimhe again, because that rule in the construction of Páirc Caoimhe and the amount of times Cork gets travel up, so Kerry will be travelling to Cork. But in terms of Connacht and Ulster, I don't think any decision has been made in terms of where the games will be played. But it'll be interesting. I think the one interesting thing is, if we all, and hopefully, look, this COVID-19 thing again, should there be a marked difference in terms of the crowds that will attend the matches at the start in October, November, compared to what you'd have in December? Will you get, I don't think you'll have full crowds, but surely you'd have more 2 months down the road. Like, when you think how long and how far we've come in the last month and a half, in terms of crowding and social distancing and the improvements we've made, surely be to God come December, because you can imagine two counties scrambling for tickets. Like, it's a nightmare with 82,000 people inside there. It's going to be crazy with if you have 45,000, a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. And obviously the atmosphere will be different. It's going to be a different championship, I think, but everybody accepts that at this stage, Mikey.
Yeah.
Cork and Kerry for me would sell out if it's straight knockout. I could guarantee you that if you could sell 42,000 tickets for Páirc Caoimhe, you would sell them for a straight knockout game, 100%, because it's a real throwback to the old days.
I think you'd sell 42,000 tickets for two flies crawling up a wall at this stage, to be honest.
That's true. As Pat Spillane said to me there last week when he was talking about viewing figures, he said, Rory, if you had the South Kerry Wheelbarrow Championship on RT at the minute, you'd have record audiences watching. So, like, you know, he's dead right. One other consideration, which they probably will have to factor in, is lights. Because if you have extra time and penalties going on, let's say if it's a 4 o'clock throw-in or three, you know, or whatever it might be, it'll get down at 5 o'clock. So they will have to be cognizant of lights. And that's a problem in Connacht, by the way, because there's only one inter-county venue in the whole of Connacht with floodlights.
Oh, bumper championship for Castlebar then, yeah?
Bumper for Castlebar, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Brendan, what about that? Obviously, Tipperary won an All-Ireland in front of 80,000 people, 80,000 people plus last September, August. What do you think of the idea of an All-Ireland final played in front of 30 or 40,000 people, which will sound and maybe in some ways feel like a Leinster football final, which is one of the greatest insults you could pay any sporting event at this stage?
No, you don't be going comparing the hurling to football now. It will be weird, but look, I think the players, as the championship went on, Tomás kind of alluded there, if we get down to 1 meter social distance into two, you'll have more allowed into our stadium. So the initial rounds of this, I would expect it will be kind of a suck it and see job for the GAA. They'll probably take all the huge precautions, and then maybe as we get into December and we get to the final stages and Croke Park and all, we may be down to that 1 meter. You might get 40,000 in there. But whoever can get in there to scramble, there'll be murder for tickets, what way the corporate boxes, premium levels, all that stuff go. Your head will be melted thinking about all of it. But as a player's point of view, if you can get an opportunity to play on the second Sunday in December in an All-Ireland final, supposing there's a man or dog watching it, you'll get yourself up for it because you'll have been used to playing in that kind of environment and atmosphere in the previous matches. And that'll be just that, and you'll be grateful to have the opportunity to play in it. Croke Park is a very, very weird place. I remember playing All-Ireland quarterfinals in there. I always found it a nightmare because there's an echo. You can hear the ball, the thud of the ball. When someone does something, the hair doesn't go up in the back of your neck as normal because the adrenaline isn't firing because the crowd are roaring. Someone pulls on the ball or a block or whatever. It's just a block and a clash of hurley. And you can hear the players shouting, which you wouldn't hear before. So all that stuff is unusual on your senses as a player. But I'm sure these teams will get used to it through the course of the championship. But like I said, Croke Park, All-Ireland final day, it will be weird, but it'll also be special for these players.
All right. Lads, I think several of us have children that have to be put to bed, so we might have to leave it at that, I think. Put myself to bed as well. Thank you to Tomás, Brendan and Rory. I'll be back in a moment with the next...
Tomás has to get to KC's.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a moment with the next part in our GAA coaching webinar series.
Oh! Holy Moses!
I'm delighted to be joined today by Ciarán Kearney and Liam Moggan, who are two of the participants in the GAA's webinar series, which is ongoing at the moment and has been a great hit during the pandemic. And the two gentlemen here today are going to talk to us about an intriguing area of sports psychology. How are you doing this morning, guys?
I'm good. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning.
So Dr. Ciarán Kearney is a sports psychologist and a program manager of Antrim GAA. Liam Moggan is a coach, educator, and formerly of Sport Ireland Coaching. So Liam was saying before we came on air, he hasn't got any degrees, etc., hanging behind him. This is more a life of experience, Liam, that has got you into this area. Is that fair to say?
It is a life of unintended or unexpected experience, really. Mike, I qualified as a physical education teacher. I was a middle distance runner. I played basketball, and I firmly believe that if you were physically fit, you could accomplish anything. I believe that it was part of my DNA. And a hurling coach in Dublin, Lar Foley, came and asked me to help coach the Dublin senior hurling team. This was way back now in the late 80s, 1988.
Back when it wasn't a plum gig.
Back when it was very unusual. But it wasn't. And Wexford were haunting us regularly at intervals at that time. But really, after my first year, I realised it took me a year to realize, no matter how long I had access to the guys physically, let's say I had 6 or 8 hours a week, I wasn't really getting through to them. And it dawned on me quite slowly that if I could get their heads, I had them 24/7. So I readjusted my focus more towards having an impact on how they think and how they feel. And that's what got me down in a very experiential way, full of mistakes, I'd have to say. Very significant learning opportunities. But it did get me around to the idea that mental fitness is important. And it's this, I call it the state of mind that helps a person perform to their best. And add on to it, mental toughness is getting into that state of mind.
Okay.
The team... And Ciarán, I heard you talk about it yesterday. The team allowed me hide a little bit or hide my inadequacies. So when I began to work with some of those players one-to-one and some of other people one-to-one, it highlights some of the successes, but by God, it put up on a banner the challenges of making an impact one-to-one as well. And they became valuable ways of learning.
Okay. And Kieran, just a little bit about your own background, where you studied and kind of the area of sports psychology, perhaps, that you specialize in or where that you focus on.
Yeah, certainly, Mikey. And as Liam has said, it's been a journey for me also. I grew up, like many people in Ireland, with Gaelic games and loved it, but also athletics. I was honoured to play for my club and my county at underage level, and I'll win provincial and All-Ireland honours. But when I got to university and I began as a teacher, actually training to study art and teach art, I picked up on something which related to a book my father had given me, a book going back maybe to the 70s, called The Social Animal by Elliot Aronson, a social psychologist. And that really caught my imagination because I saw an overlap between imagery, art, our imagination, and the discipline of psychology. So I left St. Mary's University College. I left the art room upstairs, where I'm now based with Gaelfast, 30 years on. And I went to train as a psychologist. I'm doing my undergraduate degree. I left and did counselling, and I do consider counselling skills and group work skills really essential elements of being a better coach and actually a better mentor. But my master's and PhD more recently in publications, very, very pleased to be able to be part of a project which was published last year, Pure Sport, along with the late, great Professor Aidan Moran and Johnny Kramer, who's still very much involved in sport. And for me then, it was actually blending two parts of my life together, the academic discipline and training in psychology, and the personal love, which I still have for sport overall and Gaelic games in particular. So I consider myself more a Gael, a sports person, who translates principles of psychology to sport just as I see them applied in other walks of life. And I suppose more recently, just to finish on this point, in the last 8, 9, 10 years, I've been awakened to the fact that many sports around the world have been doing this for a long time. And I consider it to be an essential advantage to Gaelic games to have the ideas and principles translated to the GAA from psychology on an evidence basis, but also, as Liam has said, through experience. Good coaches, after all, have good psychological skills, just like good teachers and good parents. And my expertise in the area is very much intended to help those people who are working directly with players.
Great. Okay, so look, what we're doing here is trying to give tips to coaches and kind of indirectly to players, I guess, because we like to think both are listening. Hi, if you're out there. So like, there's a few things here. I suppose for a lot of people, they'll say sports psychology, you know, they're one of two people. One, they say you either have to have a degree or a lifetime of experience like you two guys to do this, or else they're going to look at some of it, and I'll be honest, this is how I look at it sometimes, and say, the likes of Enda McNulty, sure, all you do is tell Brian O'Driscoll he's really good at rugby, and then he believes he's really good at rugby. Brian O'Driscoll doesn't really need to be told he's very good at rugby. So you get these two kind of points of view that, one, this thing is impossible for me to do, or B, this is kind of snake oil, you know, and I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying these are kind of two points of view that you have. Liam, can you kind of break it down as simply as you can? Like, what is sports psychology as it applies to your junior A, intermediate, underage coach? What should they be trying to achieve with what we're going to call here sports psychology?
Okay, I'll do it just in the way I'm thinking right now. I was challenged unexpectedly one day when I introduced myself as a facilitator. I was challenged immediately by a young teenager. Says, what's a facilitator? And right there in that workshop at that time, I didn't know. I'd never been asked that before. It was boom. I had to put up my hand and say, I wasn't too sure and described then what I was going to do. But I looked up afterwards in the dictionary what a facilitator was, and it said it's someone who makes things easier. And really looking back on what I had tried to do with any label, coach, psychologist, performance manager, father, teacher, anything, that really my role could have been summarized by someone who was trying to make things easier, to damping down any anxieties which could be there factually and in reality, and maybe some ones that were rising that shouldn't have been there. So that role of being a carer, being a helper, and having an empathy that the person was going into the unknown, took me a while to realize that competition is a struggle. Competition is a yardstick to measure improvement. But by actually falling back on something I did earlier on, saying, I know you're in great shape, I know you're a great player, something like you were saying there, it doesn't help in any way, because we're stepping into the unknown. And really, in these days of the pandemic, we can see what anxiety can be created when we are aware of the unknown. We never know what's happening from day to day. We don't know what's going to happen in 5 minutes' time. But the pandemic heightened our awareness of not knowing what's happening. And thereby, we became anxious in some ways. So I see the role as someone who is trying to help the good people or any of them be able to value what it is they're good at. A self-awareness, a self-esteem, not bestowed on them by awards or by something outside themselves, exams, results or whatever, but something that's deep inside themselves that they know they're good at. And to help in a facilitative role, be able to get them to articulate that and then repeat it under stressful situations.
Okay, that sounds, you know, that sounds very, not straightforward, but that sounds like a tool that will aid a coach, that will aid a team. Kieran, something you wanted to touch on was the misconceptions about psychology and GAA. So I guess you would probably echo a lot of what Liam has said there. And then I suppose you might just kind of clear up for us then what are some of the things that people think sports psychology is that it isn't, and how that might be unhelpful.
Yeah, I agree with Liam. Fundamentally, as you do in coaching, in psychology, or in any discipline, profession, vocation, you develop a philosophy of practice, and it takes time to do that. And for me, it is the ethic on a personal level, but also a professional code of ethics, that if you can't make something better, don't make it worse, whether it's within a group or for an individual. And that's fundamental to everything then. It doesn't always involve intervention, but you can't actually assume that you're the panacea, you're the person, the instrument for good, and everything else is wrong. And I think some of the misconceptions, Mikey, come from misunderstandings about psychology overall. The notion of people lying on a couch, that you know, the old Freudian concept or caricature of people telling their stories and woes, and that this isn't counselling. Counselling skills can be used by psychologists to great effect in different walks of life. But and I have a background in that. But it is not counselling. We're not asking people to engage in a counselling process. That may be needed along the way, and there are players with whom I've worked, and former players as well, them I've supported. It's not motivational speaking, and this is one of the things that I suppose gets confused along the road too. It's great to hear someone who motivates you and speaks, but as Liam has mentioned, ultimately in all of the evidence, over 30, 40, 50 years on this, from organisational psychology through educational and also into sport, all of the evidence shows the best motivated people are intrinsically motivated. And sometimes individuals need to find a way to do that. And this period of time has been especially challenging for people on an individual level of motivation, because we don't have that social contact. And the last couple of things just to mention, it's not stunts or gimmicks. I have encountered stories, some appalling stories, of what you've described as, you used the term, Mikey, snake oil merchants, but there are practitioners, whether it is misguided and unintentional, or maybe pretense. I don't know, I'm not judging it, but that has nothing to do with psychology and sport, and I would be quite firmly against the idea of people who trade under false pretenses, because I have evidence of it. I mentioned it at the National Coaching Conference, of harm being done in circumstances like that. So for me, it's actually working hand in glove with coaching, the coaching team, with individual athletes or players, and with the group as a whole. It's nearly that 3 or 4 level approach to it. And that requires a lot of skill. And ultimately, I would say that actually you come back to the context as a coach or a player that you're in yourself. Certainly we can draw on ideas from elsewhere. And I think, I look at the Irish rugby team you mentioned, Brian O'Driscoll not involved, but Paul O'Connell talked about how he came in contact with somebody who was a psychologist midstream in his career. And up to that point, he was very sceptical, and maybe rightly so, because unprofessional practitioners can leave mistakes, not just mistakes, but maybe damage and misconceptions. But Paul O'Connell changed his mind and found that in rugby terms, the second part of his career was the best part. And I think through working with players, the feedback that I get, and teams and managers, is that they begin to learn these skills and use them and make them their own. And ultimately, I think for me, you're trying to put yourself out of business, as paradoxical as that might sound. Those who would seek to make themselves as a dependent part, that people depend upon you, are not approaching this from an ethical or an effective standpoint. Ultimately, like coaching and education, psychology ought to be equipping people to better cope, to deal and promote their mental health and well-being on a daily basis, but also to harness their own potential in performance terms. And those two things, for me, actually go hand in hand.
We mentioned the Irish rugby team, and I did mention Enda McNulty, and I just want to be clear. I in no way am insinuating that Enda McNulty is a snake oil salesman. He's one of the most prominent performance consultants, or however you would name him, and I have heard him being discussed at length and by people who have used him, and they've said how effective he is. Just want to be clear, I wasn't calling him a snake oil salesman. I guess, moving on, Liam, I'm interested in what sports psychology, how can it be applied by, you know, the guy who's down the field with the, you know, with his 20 young lads or his 20 intermediate hurlers? You know, he hasn't got a backroom team. He doesn't have a budget to hire one of you two guys. Is there, what can he do himself? Because he's obviously thinking that, you know, that's something that the elite do. That's not something I do. But are there things he can do to kind of aid, as you say, make things easier, improve state of mind, you know, and as Kieran says, at least don't make anything worse.
Yeah. That role of first aid is a big one. And before I answer that specifically, Mikey, I suppose when I began to become, as a teacher, as a coach, a woman who had passed by my life when I was younger began to reappear. I spent a lot of time in my holidays with my grandparents in a place called Clonaglasha, outside Tuam, small little townland. And when any incident happened in a house, an accident, a birth, a death, everybody called for Mrs. Kane. Now, Mrs. Kane was just another woman in the village. She had no first aid qualifications. She wasn't a nurse. She wasn't anything. But I, as a young boy leading into my teens, I can remember the sense of calm that used to come over the house and everybody when Mrs. Kane arrived. It was, whoo, Mrs. Kane is here. Whoo, everything's now okay. She didn't make things worse. She just seems to consolidate things until the other people came along. And during my training and practice as a teacher and a coach, this image of this lady kept coming through me. Just keep things calm. So I just wanted to mention that. As an enthusiastic athletics coach, I saw the what of athletics being really, really important. I'm one of the early graduates from what was Thomond College and the National College of Physical Education. So we're really fed into our DNA that we were new teachers, new subject area about physical fitness, about physical well-being and something. So when I became a teacher and coach, of course, it was that I was imparting. And again, it took a while to realize I wasn't a coach of athletics. I wasn't a coach of basketball. I wasn't a coach or teacher of physical education. as really someone who was working in a greater holistic climate of working with people. I was coaching people, people who played football, people who studied geography, people who ran, people who did art. And it was that fascination with the uniqueness and the unpredictability and the complexities of people that can intrigue you about all of this. Because just when you think you got it, I got it with that person. Ultimately, if you have influenced some form of change of behavior or some improvement, that relationship between the two of you is changed. It's an experiment of one always. So the person down the field is key to the mental fitness of the people in the field with them. And I think everybody in the field is key to the mental fitness of the people in the field. In the field. Aidan Moran has been referred to here now a few times, and I got to know Aidan in Coaching Ireland, a gentleman whom I used to love watching speak as well as listen to him speak. He was special. But one of the first mnemonics I can remember he provided was PRIDE, P-R-I-D-E. I don't know if he said it to you, Karen. Personal responsibility in developing excellence. And it was something I rode along with for a while, because I did feel for a long, long time that the coach should be developing an ego, a self-esteem, a strong, strong person. But the more I saw into that, that I found that egotism, being developing the ego, is the worst of sins, really. That we all rely on each other. We all depend on each other. There's a lovely Irish term, fita fuicha. We're all interrelated, interlinked. So the coach down the field is the best person, I feel, to create the climate for all of them to learn together. Now, he needs to be a sports physiologist, a psychologist, a parent, a bit of a rogue, a bit of a person, a bit of a genius, a bit of a clown. All these roles are already in our DNA. And we invite ourselves into opportunities where we can see how best, what best personality of the menu of personalities that we have can we pull out here now. And of course, we're best then to go and extend our abilities by talking to someone like a Kieran, by reading up what they read, and by applying it in safe ways. And if I just add on that safety, Kieran made a good point. If someone comes to you with a physical injury, a broken bone, an appendix, you're not going to say, well, I've got a sharp knife here. I think I can take that out for you. You wouldn't even. But sometimes if people come to you with some type of a need to become more mentally aware or less anxious, there's a kind of a thing and say, well, I can get in there and help you. That there's a risk there. There are clear division lines between where you should go and where you can't. So yes, the coach down the field, key man, often is a key man in an unknown way, but needs to know the roles that they're playing.
Yeah, I think we all had those coaches when we were kids or maybe as adults, you know, the ones who kind of got through to you. And they may not have got through to somebody else on the team who may have preferred the coach that you didn't like. So as you said, the menu of personalities, I find that quite interesting. And like, Kieran, is there any way to get beyond that? I guess there's no way to say you can reach everybody. It's because you're talking about personalities here. When you're talking about psychology at an amateur level, it is really just how you as yourself can impact an individual. Is that correct?
Well, I'll go beyond my training a wee bit to talk about my experience without breaking any confidences, because that's another crucial part of the approach that I would hold to. But let me start with an example from elsewhere. There was a manager, because this is in the public domain, there was a manager of an English Premiership team, Leicester City. His name was Claudio Ranieri. And Ranieri had been nicknamed the Tinkerman because in previous teams he went in and he started poking around and rejigging things from the outset. But two psychologists have written about this, Alex Haslam and Steve Riker. They've talked about the change in terms of the identity of that team and how Ranieri adapted himself to the team. And he, in an interview he gave, he said, look, I just stopped doing that, tinkering around, and I observed, and I came to understand, and I spoke and I listened, and I tried to develop connection. And then, together, fortify the team, help the team to achieve what it was capable of achieving. And I think that's a good illustration for me of how good coaches can actually play a fruitful role in this. In honesty, I think all of us can learn. I've been on a 23, 24 year training program in this and still not finished. I'm doing my chartership under the supervision of a very eminent psychologist in Britain at the minute. But the simple skills, can we help everybody? Yes, but we need to know the person. And it might not be me who's best equipped. So as a coach, actually, a study I did a couple of years ago with a colleague from Ulster University, we looked at the potential to raise knowledge and understanding of mental health in coaches, and Gaelic coaches in the GAA were among those who were involved in that study. It proved very interesting, Mikey, because we found that across the range of coaches, and there were several hundred coaches involved, if you provided mental health education of the right quality and kind, you could help reduce stigma around mental illness, and you could encourage the capacity of and the confidence of coaches to signpost those who may have indicators of mental illness to the appropriate support services. Now, I think that actually means we have a network through the GAA where if we resource and build capacity among coaches, they can then, because they have more contact time with young people who are experiencing great difficulties in this time, with players and with people within the wider club or community. As Liam has said, people who are sentient beings, sort of a beacon within the local parish. But we can together actually build those networks, and the pre-existing infrastructure of the GAA provides a great vehicle for delivering right messages. And I know Pat Daly, the former director of national director of games development and coaching, has been working on this idea of promoting the concept of going well, that well-being and lifelong learning ought not to be something which is specialist. It's a quality of life skill that we can cultivate and develop. And I am particularly interested in the performance side of how you can enable people to maximize their performance, to reach peak performance. That's not an accident. And the skills can be shared, and individuals and teams can do that. I've seen that firsthand. Despite expectations of others, sometimes against all of the odds. But I think that we shouldn't see well-being and performance as dichotomized, as a choice of one or the other. The word performance, I was going to say this last night on the webinar, and I'll just finish with this point, but the word performance is a great kind of a clue to how these things fit together, well-being and performance. Right in the middle of the word performance is the word form. And I've always found, and Liam may have experience of this too, if somebody is in good form, they're more likely to have a good performance. Mm. Look for form. Players and coaches will get to know one another's form. And if you come to training or a match or the club in bad form, you know, maybe it's time to check out. Maybe it's time to sit back. There are things, obviously, routines and techniques that you can use. But I think if we can cultivate and encourage people to be in good form and to be going well, then they'll prosper in games, whether or not that involves national success.
Yeah. So really, the idea of developing the GAA or any sporting organization into kind of a mental health kind of not watchdog, but you know, kind of a support network. It's a fascinating idea, and it would be amazing, and it would be great if you get the impression that younger generations are more understanding of these things. There's less of a stigma, so that may develop, and it would be really interesting. And on a personal note, you're speaking to a rare breed, an Irish Leicester City fan, so I must get the name of that paper from you afterwards, because I'd really like to read that. I've read most of the things about that season, but I haven't read that. Kind of sticking with, not Leicester City, sticking with the idea of mental health and how people might be feeling at the moment. Liam, this has been a very strange time for everybody, 3-4 months of inactivity to a point, not seeing your friends, not being down the field, which is an integral part of so many people's lives, whether they're coaches, you know, officials, just people who like to watch matches, and obviously players. what would be your fears, or what do you think coaches should be looking out for now as their teams come back together for the first time in such a long time, and are also, whatever their level, they're in a little bit of a rush and under a little bit of pressure to get to match fitness or to find some cohesion again as a team before they rush into their championships at an unusual time of the year? Everything's different, I suppose, and everything is probably, there's a lot of enthusiasm, but there's also under that probably a little bit of pressure, whatever the level.
Okay, one quick little thing, I'll just rely over on a phrase, a little, a lot is better than a lot, a little. So I would put caution now on coaches to dump a lot of stuff in a little amount of time and really to progress very, very slowly in an enjoyable and safe way. So let's just leave that for the minute. A lot of what we've been saying has been interlinked in the sense of coaching people and wellness and form and so forth. Again, going back to the younger Liam, I felt that success would lead to happiness. Whereas an older, more mature Liam is coming to the idea now that happiness really, and good form, good mental health, maximizes this feeling of success. So the big job for the coaches now is to value today, this session that we have today, because let's get back to some of the things we were talking about, the unknown. Will there really be a completed club championship this year? We don't know. Will there be an inter-county championship this year? We don't know. I mean, there's a real dichotomy of what's happening now in that from Monday, players can go down to the field and have full contact. But on their way home, they're expected to wear a mask and stay 2 meters away from someone in the newsagents. So we have to tread carefully. So that little maxim of a little, a lot is better than a lot, a little, can be extended to valuing, well, we're back. We're here, the company and the crack and the mixing with each other that we have missed. We have it back, and the football is actually incidental to all of that. I spoke to a lot of players during the down, and I was struck how, when I asked them what they were missing, none of them, in the case now, nothing of a research nature here, but none of them said, I miss the football matches. Nobody said that. They miss the crack, they miss the training, they miss the buzz, they miss going down to the club. Now, on Monday, they have that back. So, hallelujah, let's be joyous for that. There was a running coach I worked with in Dublin for a short time, Lara O'Byrne, nil desperandum is the logo for Clonliffe Harriers, don't despair. Lara had some great phrases. Now, this phrase he shared normally before a brutally tough interval session. We got to know that. But Lara would put his hands out wide and say, God, it's great to be alive. Now, I remember I saw it as a red flag. Oh, this is going to be a brutal training session. But again, there's this wonderful, if we're down in the field again, now this phrase has a lot more meaning. Not only are we alive, we're down in the field. We're in good form. We're here to play. Play what? Play football. So again, I would say to the coach, small steps, but diminish the role of football. Football is just a medium for something far better. People going back to their homes safely. And having said that, that was great. I can't wait to go the next day. But today was great. Mm. That should be my approach to the coaches.
Kieran, would you also say in this strange time that maybe that message of let's just enjoy this should overtake from performance for a brief time? Is that the way to safeguard people? It's very difficult to come in and say, right, we're going to win the county championship, lads, and the boys haven't, you know, seen each other for 2.5 months. Is it better? Very much baby steps, and let's remember why we play this before we try and think about, you know, winning 5 games in 6 weeks or whatever it's going to take.
Yeah, I think there's an adaptation to be made by coaches in this period of time, in the same way as players and the rest of us in society are making adaptations. And one of those is that we have to now reconsider the position that we're in and what's ahead of us. So you may have had season's goals. It's probably a good time to reconsider those, and even what the purpose is, what the expectations are of the players in your team, whatever age that team might be. A conversation about that would be a good thing to have, because you then get a sense of where the team is, and maybe so some of those conversations will happen on a one-to-one or individual basis, maybe coming from the the car park to the pitch or from the changing room across. I think there's a framework or a notion of, because there are obviously other teams, there are Olympic athletes in our country as well, whose competition has been postponed till next year. And I was looking over some of the research on this and the guidance. Now, in all honesty, Mikey, none of us have been in this position before. So I think it's with great sensitivity that we approach this time, and also with a bit of generosity to one another, that we are trying to find the best way forward. But the guidance would be that we're moving through different stages. Obviously, in terms of government policy and public health policy, that's reflected, I think, in the GAA, that's also reflected. And thankfully, it's starting to be reflected north and south across the whole island as one, which is how GAA people would like to approach it. This stage is considered to be a stage of restoration, a restorative stage, as we enter out of hibernation or lockdown, this sort of dormant period where there's been inactivity or less activity. And I think that there's three elements to this. I think access or accessing the sport, that's one part. And if you don't mind, I'd like to consider or suggest that we have a different approach in the GAA, that we encourage people to opt in. And that means the individual can opt in whenever they're ready to opt in. Not that people opt out, that we assume everybody turns up, and if you're not there, well then, we're coming to get you. I think that idea that we assume that everybody's ready would be mistaken at this moment. So opting in would be the approach that I would encourage. And people might opt in and step back again because of circumstances in their family or their own difficulties with it. The second thing is affirming that we provide even better support now. And I would say, actually, you mentioned, is there a choice between performance or well-being? I don't think there is. We do the two together, but I do think maximum support, there's additional challenges. And all of the studies and research about resilience in different walks of life show that you can build that best, you can foster that best, and I've seen it happen within teams whenever they experience great challenge. Now, this has been, I won't use the word unprecedented, but an extraordinary time of challenge for all of us. But that then means we need to give greater support. And support comes in different ways, in terms of practical, emotional support, the support of teammates, that cohesion and friendship, as Liam has said. And I think that's the second element. The third one is the restorative, that we're beginning to find our way back. Now, just make the point about, there's concern about injury and overloading players. And reference has been made before. I think it was mentioned in one of your podcasts, Maggie, that, you know, in professional soccer in Germany, there has been a post-lockdown, a very significant increase in the occurrence of injuries. Mm. Let me add to that, that a lot of the research shows that there are psychosocial stressors are very, can be indicators or contributors to injury as well. So the best approach is a gentle approach in every sense. And I think actually what young people and members of the association throughout the GA have shown during this period is a compassion, is a commitment to that civic and community ethic. Why would we cast that aside now? Because we're back on the pitch. The sentiment that Liam expressed is one I think we should reinforce every time. Any day you have grass under your feet is a good day. So for me, that should be the start and end of any training session in this period.
That would be a lovely point to finish on, but I do like to, with these, just to give, ask you both maybe, just to give one tip, one thing for a coach or a player to keep in mind. They may have had that first training session, but let's say for the next time they go down to the pitch, you know, just one thing, one little, you know, whatever you want to call it, just one little talisman or whatever to keep in your mind that may help you or help your teammates in their mental well-being to participate and compete. Liam, is there anything that pops into your head?
The first thing that would, particularly in these times, I would ask every coach to say something good to every player. something good that they did on that day. So it's not an airy-fairy, wishy-washy thing to observe and analyse very closely and to affirm something good and to probably then maximise that sense of affirming and give an opportunity to players in groups of three for a very short time just to affirm each other. What did you see the other doing that they liked that day? And just let's throw it out there and let's see how they grab it.
Okay, and Ciarán?
Yeah, we've all gone through this in different ways. I think lessons from lockdown would be a good thing to consider and reflect upon. And each of us have had strengths which have got us this far. Those could add to and help us in the time ahead. I myself find things like mantras very useful, especially when the going's tough. And Liam, as an athletics coach or a runner, knows how endurance sports use this very effectively. For me, the idea that there's an ESPN 30-30 documentary on a basketball team in America, North Carolina State, the Wolfpack, that Coach Valvano took to an unexpected success. But they kept on getting setbacks over and over again. And this has been a period of setbacks. We've learned to cope with those. We've found different techniques in ourselves. And I think to know that some of those will help you in the time ahead would be a great lesson. So for me, the mantra, survive in advance, which captures that documentary, or Ask Ilga, Bahu August Travu, Shinan Roth.
All right. Well, listen, it's been fascinating more than listening to you both. And I think any teams or any athletes who are getting a little bit of advice from you two guys in the next couple of weeks or months couldn't be going too far wrong. And of course, if you want to know any more about the GAA's webinar series, you can go to GAA.ie and you can find out, because they're running, they're churning them out. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. And there is something for everybody there. So check that out at GAA.ie. Right. That is it for this week. Just like to say thank you for listening in or watching if you've been on YouTube. We will be back next week, and the Munster and Leinster hurling draws are happening on the 6-1 News tonight, which tonight for us being Friday, and we will have lots of reactions to that on Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport on RT Radio 1 over the weekend, and the Sunday game is back on Sunday, and of course we'll have all the news, all the interviews, features, everything you want on the RT website as sport comes back in earnest with FA Cup, Irish Derby this weekend. We've got all sorts of good stuff happening. So just again, like to say thank you to all my guests today, and we will catch you again next week. Thank you very much.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, Moses!